The Chris Byrne Show, powered by Dynamic Money, creating personal financial plans built for life.
Well, welcome to the Chris Byrne Show. It is a Labor Day holiday weekend. I hope you're enjoying it. And in the midst of that, we are 9 weeks from today, or about right over 9 weeks from today, we will vote in the next presidential election. Now, we know that both sides, Republicans and Democrats, will be dropping op-ed research left and right. You're going to see all sorts of things come out about both candidates. Here's my question for you. And I want to talk about the Atlantic article in a second. It's the most recent example of this. But my question for you is this. What would it take? Is it possible at this point for you to change your mind on who you're voting for? And we're not going to dig in and sit and defend all the reasons why President Trump or Joe Biden is good or bad, or act like we have some sort of expertise on knowing whether the sources presented about them in these various articles are true or not. We don't know that. But what we do know is who we're voting for, most of us. Or if you're an independent voter, what is it that's going to be the issue that sways you? I want to know, what would it take? What would it take for you to change your opinion and vote a different way in a few weeks for the election? Whether that's literally voting for the other candidate, whether it's just staying home, I don't know what that looks like for you. What would it take? The number 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. That's 1-800-972-8255. So let's talk first, just describe this Atlantic article very quickly. And again, not with the purpose of me sitting and going through and going, well, this appears correct or not correct, purely for interest's sake, because it came as a bombshell to a lot of people. And I want to know, what impact does that have on us? And again, just as an example, well, what would that mean for you? Did it change how you thought at all? My assumption from talking with many of you is no, it doesn't. But let me give some context here. So the Atlantic article just comes out on September 3rd. It says, Trump said, Americans who died in war are losers and suckers. It's by Jeffrey Goldberg. He's the editor-in-chief of the Atlantic, so no small figure in journalism. And he goes through and writes a very intense article about things that he quotes the president as having said about veterans who were killed, veterans who were possibly captured, veterans who were injured in war. I mean, it's an intense article if you've read it. And immediate response is Trump coming back out and saying, I never said any of those things. And the hard part about this for any of us, because we're not sitting and talking with these people, is that all we can do is listen to various perspectives and judge, well, what do we think is right here? And it's especially hard when you have, for instance, Jennifer Griffin, longtime Fox News reporter, very well known, coming out and saying she went behind the article and got a lot of folks that agreed and said yes and verified sources. And then you have other people that a lot of folks respect saying no, they've talked to folks, they were there, and that never happened. And you and I, again, have really no way of digging into that, do we? So I don't want to dig into whether this is true or not. What I want to know is, does it have an impact on you? And because we expect these things to be coming out over the next number of weeks, what would it be? Is it possible something personal could come out about either candidates that would change your opinion of voting for that candidate? Would it have to be a policy issue or some sort of major policy failure that would change your opinion? And I ask because if you go back to 2016, Trump made this famous comment, and I've always thought about it since then, but he said, I could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and I wouldn't lose voters. And in some ways, I think there's some truth in understanding that reality, that the base is so strong on both sides right now that it's hard to imagine often what it would take for someone to change their opinion on this. So especially if you're someone that is changing your opinion, I would love to know. But if we go back in time, forgetting the Atlantic article for a second, if you go back to 2016, President Trump said so many things that when he said them, the news media came back and said, well, this is going to derail his chances of getting elected. There's no way he can get elected after saying this. Perhaps the most famous was his commentary on John McCain, which actually goes really far back. The first McCain as a possible presidential candidate, he was asked about McCain, and Trump said, quote, he was captured. Does being captured make you a hero? I don't know. I'm not sure. And then that same sentiment now, 15 years later, when he's now candidate Trump for president, he's talking in Iowa. He's questioned whether McCain was a war hero because he was captured. He questions whether McCain was a war hero because he was captured in Vietnam. And Trump says, quote, people that he likes people that weren't captured. And you all remember this. And there was outrage. There was outrage among voters, among veterans, among a lot of folks in the GOP. And yet it didn't stop President Trump from becoming the primary candidate. And it certainly didn't stop him from winning the election. And yet, historically, we would go back and say something like that could derail it. And that's why you saw so many people surprised by that and other allegations, sexual allegations against the president back then. We all remember the came back and apologized, and everybody said he's going to be sunk. He's going to be sunk by this. And he wasn't. And so my question again, just to put it to you, what would it take? Is this enough for you? I read conservatives across the board. Some conservatives are very concerned about this, but they've always been folks don't like the president. Other conservatives go, well, you know what? I just don't believe it. I don't believe it in general. It's published by The Atlantic. The Atlantic tends to be more liberal. This is just a hit piece against the president. It doesn't matter. The bigger point for me, what would it take then? Or are you at a place where you say it really doesn't matter at this point? 9 weeks out, I'm not changing my opinion on this. Again, the number 404-872-0750. And it's not just President Trump. Biden has been in politics quite a long time. And so there are plenty of scandals you could refer back to. In fact, Biden was first elected to the Senate in 1972. Get your mind around that for a second. Quite a long time. His first presidential run, if you remember, was in 1988. And at that point, he was the young guy running for president. And that run was derailed by a scandal, which by today's standards of a scandal, I don't know, would really fit. But at that point, it was a really big deal. He was knocked out because of a plagiarism scandal. And along with that, there's been scandals around his son, certainly Hunter Biden and what and his relationship with him and, you know, Hunter's work in Ukraine and then his personal life, et cetera. There's been allegations against Joe Biden about touching women inappropriately, violating their personal space. 8 women came forward earlier this year with various allegations against him. Some of those were disproven, others to question mark, right? So in other words, both candidates here have plenty of dirt that anybody could pull up on them. That is, there's no doubt. And we expect that only to intensify. That's become the modern nature of politics, is you're going to come out with things and you're going to come out in hard-hitting ways, especially when we're just a few weeks out from the election. Virtually everyone says that Trump is probably going to lose the popular vote, but has a chance of winning the Electoral College, just like he did back in 2016. It is a tight race. And you add on top of that the coronavirus and the question about mail-in ballots and all these things. Right, so there's so much tension and intensity surrounding this race that we all know about. But I want to kind of go beneath the surface there and say, well, what would it take for you? Have you even thought about changing your opinion? Has your opinion shifted on either of the candidates? And at this point, could it shift on either of the candidates? Because I think it just personally, it's interesting to me. I think it's interesting to see the shift in politics over time to go in the end. Beneath what we say we're outraged about, in the end, beneath things that we may or may not personally agree with, what would actually have to happen for us to change our vote? We're going to go to Joy. Joy, thanks so much for calling the Chris Burns Show. What are your
Hey there. Thanks for letting me talk. Basically, I think the whole thing has gotten down to what did they say now? What did they say now? To me, it's not what they say. It's what they do. It's the policies. I'm interested in capitalism. I'm interested in freedom of religion, freedom of speech. I'm interested in babies not being killed in the womb. And so these are the things I look at. If President Trump says something that may or may not have been said, that's not what I'm looking at. I'm looking at what's he done. You know, politicians say a lot of things and they promise a lot of things, but what have they done? And that's what I look to.
Okay.
So I don't plan to change because the platforms are like A to Z so far as what they're advocating at this point.
Sure. And that's what I hear from a lot of folks in 2016 as well, was honestly, a lot of people told me, I don't like Trump personally. That's what they said. They're like, I don't particularly, I wouldn't want my kids to have him as their Sunday school teacher per se. But in terms of policy, he's down the line. I agree with him. And so I'm going to vote for him. And I just wonder, as you look back, I don't know, I remember so clearly growing up with Bill Clinton as president and just the outrage on the right about his personal morality, et cetera, which, you know, you can look at his policies, et cetera, but that was such a huge issue for the conservative right. Do you feel like you've changed in that at all? I don't know what your opinions were back in, you know, 98, 90, in the midst of that crisis, but has that changed at all for you, where now it's more a policy issue, and at that point you felt like it was more of a personal morality issue, just out of interest?
Yes, I was very upset by Bill Clinton because he actually used his office and the Oval Office for that to happen. Not something that happened in the past, but something that actually happened when he was the president of the United States. But yes, morality concerns me. But if you look at the platforms, they're both about morality.
Sure.
And so
their version of that, right? Yeah.
Yeah, their version of morality. I don't know. I just, I don't know.
I appreciate your answer. I hear what you're saying. It's for you right now. It's about the policy, and in your mind, it's like regardless of things in the past, et cetera, policy is key.
And honestly, when I hear the different stories, so many times I've heard something. Oh, Trump said this. I'm like, oh, horror. Did he say that? That's just awful. Then I'll go and I'll listen to the whole context. I'll be like, wait a minute. That's not what he said at all. So a lot of it is false news. It really is. I've watched like hour long of press conferences, and not just like when he goes to the border and he's met with the Border Patrol people, and I've heard the things they've said, and then I've seen the way they interact with him, and I've assessed new opinions by the way I see that. You know, you hear that he doesn't listen to people, he's egotistical, but then you watch him for an hour with people and you say, oh, this is not the person they said he was.
Well, Joy, thanks for your thoughts. I certainly know a lot of folks believe that way. I would love to continue hearing your thoughts. What would it take for you, if anything? Is there any way that you would change your view on who you're voting for? Again, whether that's Biden or Trump, what would that look like? The number 404-872-0750. You're listening to The Chris Burns Show.
The Chris Burns Show. Money made personal. Looking for practical tips on how to manage money? Check out DynamicMoney.com for the latest blogs.
Well, it's about nine weeks until the election. What would it take for you to change your opinion on who you're voting for? Is there any way that you would change your opinion on either side of it? We have Bill calling from Woodstock. Bill, thanks for calling the Chris Burns Show. What are your thoughts?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, I just could not vote for Trump. Period. I just couldn't vote for him, no matter who he was running against. I'm not a great Biden fan, and but I'm by no means a Trump fan. At least Biden has some morals. He has character. He has, I don't know. I just can't do it. Last election, it was terrible for me because I couldn't choose between Trump and Hillary. It was terrible. It was like choosing between, you know, licorice and, I don't know, gasoline. It was just, I can't do it. It's been a rough 3.5 years for me. I know that.
And I certainly understand that, just talking with a lot of people who feel that frustration. I would just be interested. So you're saying really it wouldn't matter what came out, even if it was verified about Biden in the next few weeks, you just couldn't do it. You couldn't vote for Trump.
No. And I don't think, I wouldn't change my mind. I mean, you could, something bad could come out about Trump within the next 3 weeks. Nobody's going to change their mind about him. People have decided who they're going to vote for. They know that right now. We ought to have the elections right now. It's just going to come down to those, what, four states that decide. That's what it is. It doesn't matter if Biden wins Georgia or not. It doesn't matter. He's got to win Florida. That's what he's got to win.
Yeah, and that goes to the whole issue of the Electoral College and where the actual victory would come out, which is a whole fascinating discussion. But I think one of the things you said is fascinating to me, which is just, it just doesn't matter at this point. It doesn't matter what came out about Biden. Now, I would extrapolate from this. And again, if you want to be a part of the conversation, it's 404-872-0750. We're talking about what could it take for you to change, if anything, for you to change who you'd vote for at this point, or just not vote at all, which is what some people have talked about. I just can't handle it. I'm just not going to vote at all. Because I don't like either side. But I do think it's interesting. One of the points that was just made was, well, stuff's going to come out. Stuff could come out about Trump. Stuff could come out about Biden in the next few weeks. Well, I assure you, stuff will come out, like it just did in the Atlantic article, right? Whether you believe that article or not, there's going to be things that come out. The deeper thing for me is sitting and trying to question both in myself and all of us, just going, what is it that motivates us here? And I think one of the big things Joy said at our first caller was this idea that, well, it's just fake news. But the interesting thing is, I talked to folks on both sides, and their response is, it's just fake news. So when something does come out, about either candidate, for the base, the response tends to be, well, we're a few weeks from the election, it's fake news. And so we've this point in media where I don't know that it really matters. In fact, I would almost wonder if it strengthens Trump's case, if it actually bolsters his candidacy to have things like this come out, because it makes his base infuriated, going, well, it's more fake news, and it really doesn't matter what the truth is there. And the same would be true for Biden, that if you suddenly saw these massive allegations, more allegations come out about Biden, that the base is almost strengthened to say, well, look at this, the conservatives are attacking us, it's not true, it's fake news, same term used across the board. And so therefore, I'm going to vote. I'm even more conscious of, I'm even more interested in. I want to do canvassing for the candidate because, doggone it, the news is trying to knock out my candidate. And the truth, I think, gets obscured somewhere. And also, does the truth even matter in the sense of, if you're a straight-line policy voter, like Joy talked about, do you even really care if it's a personal issue, if it's about something they said on a personal level? And you're going, I just care about the policies. Is it really that big of a deal for you? And we've gotten to the place in American politics, and it's changed. And I know a lot of folks would say, well, the media has always been this way. But I would say, I remember really clearly. I'm old enough to remember back when I was growing up in the 90s and just the incredible frustration and anger over the personal lives of political figures. And it's not that we don't still see that coming out. It's not that we still don't have people coming forward and saying, Biden did this, Trump did this, and us being angered by that. But in terms of actually impacting how we vote, I don't know that it does it. And I would just say it'd be interesting to see as we go forward, if this continues on, how much more polarized can we get? Because understanding what the truth is about any given candidate has to go back to the source of who's giving you that information. And right now we might say, well, it's Fox News giving it to us, or CNN or The Atlantic, et cetera, and kind of box them into a political landscape. But increasingly, too, it's social media for a lot of folks that I talk with. And so does it really matter? How do we get to the truth in that? My assumption is a lot of folks right now, it really doesn't matter over the next number of weeks what we hear or what is said. It's not going to change the way that we vote. All right, coming up, I want to talk about something specific to the coronavirus, and that is, how are our kids responding to social media? In some ways, they need it right now, but how do we keep them safe in the midst of that?
Follow Chris Burns on Twitter, at CW Burns, for more.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Okay, as a parent of a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 5-year-old, I kind of cross the spectrum here, right? I have a high schooler, a middle schooler, and an elementary school student at the same time. So if you have a moment, pray for me. I would appreciate that. But in the midst of that, here's what I've witnessed in the coronavirus. And so you, as a parent or a grandparent, I would love your thoughts on this, or on the rare chance that we have a teenager listening to the show right now, that teenager that is so interested in knowledge that they turned on this station just to hear us discussing something. We would love you to call in as well. The number 404-872-0750. And here's what I want to talk about. Social media right now. In the midst of the coronavirus, we've seen an explosion of the importance of social media, of kids connecting online through video games, through various social media apps, etc., because they can't see their friends in person. And as we see depression and suicide and mental health issues on the rise, no one can discount the importance of community. And so I've seen all sorts of articles about this all over the place. But here's my thing. If kids need it now more than ever before, perhaps, right? How do you handle the tension of keeping them safe while respecting their desire for privacy? Especially when you don't understand it. Especially if you're not someone that is incredibly good at using something like Snapchat, for instance, or you're not someone that understands Discord and video game servers. And if you're hearing me and going, I have no clue what you're talking about, that might be an indication. Right? Because your kids do. And your grandkids do. And that's how they're connecting into coronavirus. But again, parents, grandparents, or teens listening, how do you think we should handle that tension between safety, but also respecting your child, your grandchild's desire for privacy? You want to weigh in on this? It's 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. So I say this because, okay, I was a youth pastor many moons ago. Okay, years ago, I was a youth pastor right at the beginning of the social media age. And I will never forget how much that transformed what it looked like for kids to have independence, because I was working with middle school kids a lot, and I would see, and I know a lot of you that are teachers or youth pastors or youth workers in some way, you've experienced this. You saw this shift where suddenly you had 6th and 7th and 8th graders walking in with smartphones, which to their parents were something they had never experienced or used until they were adults. But now these kids are walking in with smartphones, and then suddenly you have a host of issues with that, right? And that is when sexting became a big deal, and that is when inappropriate use of this technology became a big deal. And please hear me on this. These apps are just a tool. They're not good or bad. They're just a tool, right? But as a parent, then I've got to start addressing this. And I'll never forget as a youth pastor going, I don't even understand fully how to address this because the kids are in front of me technologically. And I was pretty young at that point. And I still had no way of keeping up with where these kids were at. And so now as a parent myself, and I always laugh because I thought, you know, when I get to being a parent, I'm going to know so much about this stuff because I worked with kids for so many years. Friends, I have never felt more in the dark than I feel now. Like in any belief that I have any clue about this has totally been shattered. And I'm learning as I go, as most of us are. But I've seen an interesting number of articles recently coming out basically saying that social media could be critical for people right now, especially kids. USA Today published an article, in the age of coronavirus, could social media be kids' saving grace? Quote, they are still having relationships, kids still have relationships, but it's the relationship that we have tended to disparage over the last several years, social media. And now this expert is saying, adults are starting to realize they are real relationships. They're critical for kids, right? The Washington Post had an article, Stacey Steinberg, well-known voice in this arena, saying this may be the time to harness the power of social media as a family. Again, talking about right now that kids need this. They need this connection. And I don't disagree with that. I see that in my kids. I see my kids going, not able to visit their friends in a way they were, even when they're at school, the way their school is set up, it's staggered days, so they don't see their friends at school a lot. But on the other side of this, we have to acknowledge the reality that there are all sorts of applications and uses for these tools, which can be incredibly damaging. And the most interesting aspect for me is talking with parents about how much involvement should you have, how much oversight should you have in what your kids are doing online or via social media or on video games now and servers related to that. There was one article I found by it's from The Conversation. It says spying on your kids' phones with, and they listed a certain technology. There's many technologies that allow you to have access to see what's on your kids' phones will only undermine trust. And they said this, some parents using apps like TeenSafe, which is one of the apps, describe the sense of security it brings knowing they can watch every move and word of their children's online lives. But we need to ask why this level of scrutiny would ever be necessary. teenagers have always had secret parts of their lives, and a trusting relationship with a parent is a better antidote to the risks they may encounter than a one-size-fits-all monitoring device that carries with it the potential to undermine that trust. In other words, that the long-term trust you're trying to build with your child over many, many years could be deeply undermined if they feel like you are watching their every move. And you could even apply this to the way that you put, my son just got his driver's license, to modern devices on his car so I can see where he is and the speed that he's going, etc. Some parents I've talked to going, that's going too far. They need to have the freedom to do that. Other parents going, you better believe I have access to every bit of this. Again, would love your thoughts. It's 404-872-0750. Where is that line? Especially in the age of coronavirus, when kids are more heavily involved than ever before, where's that line between trusting my child and wanting to build that trust, but also feeling like it's important to understand their safety and their security? And I'm just going to say from my side, I definitely fall on the trust but verify side of this. I definitely believe that as long as the kids are in my house, as long as they're living with me, I have the right and, in fact, the responsibility to understand what they're involved in and what they're engaged in, what they're looking at, and that that level of accountability as a parent is critical. And I'm under no misconceptions that my children are going to go off to college and beyond or whatever they choose to do, and that the whole point of parenting is to get them to the point where they don't have to have me looking over their shoulder, right? It's to be giving them more and more freedom. But that line is fascinating. There was a detective quoted in one of these articles, and I thought this was really interesting. He's a detective that actually works on a task force related to online security. And he said this, surely as a parent, your role is to engage with your child and have a loving, caring, trusting, and the key word there is trust, relationship with your child. Immediately, if you embark on this kind of a path, the path of monitoring all your child's movements, it breaches that trust. And then he talks about his own daughter and says that at one point he put a tracking app on her phone so he could see what she was looking at. He said, quote, I felt so incredibly uncomfortable after that that I deleted the app. He said, I felt terrible for doing it. I would never, never betray her trust like that again. That just, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I hear that kind of a thing and I go, you know, my kids are in a place where I want them to feel freedom. I don't want them to feel like I'm looking over their shoulder or every time their bedroom door is closed, I'm banging in just to make sure everything is okay. But on the flip side, the idea that building trust in some way means not looking out for their privacy or not looking out for their safety over time is just foreign to me. And especially in the midst of the coronavirus, when we see more and more students relying on this as their way to function, I think more than ever, we have to find where that line is. So again, would love your thoughts. It's 404-872-0750. To call the show and just give me your thoughts, because I would love to learn what you think about this. Here's some thoughts on Snapchat specifically, because we could look at any number of different online platforms, but just listen to this for a minute. Snapchat, one of the most popular social media platforms for kids at this point, back even in 2015, okay, so this is years ago, Pew Research Group estimated 41% of teens ages 13 to 17 were using the app. Let that sink in for a minute. 5 years ago, almost half of teens, 13 to 17, were using the app. How much has that exploded since then? And how much has that exploded, especially when that becomes the go-to? And again, whether it's Snapchat or any number of other newer apps that are out there, that's exploded. Omnicorp reported that in 2020, Snapchat had an average of 218 million daily active users. It generated over 3 billion snaps or messages in a day. That active users opened the app 30 times a day. More than 60% of active Snapchatters created new content on a daily basis. In other words, people are using this constantly. Teens are using this constantly. And I'll just be straightforward. Parents, I don't fully understand Snapchat. I don't have it downloaded. I don't use Snapchat. I'm not hitting my peers up with this to understand what's going on. I don't understand it. And I even have a background working with kids, and I still know that my kids are light years ahead of me on this. And so it's been a significant struggle as I see both sides of the issue. I see the reality that there are so many families out there right now and kids out there right now that truly feel separated, that truly feel alone, and that these kinds of online platforms are creating online communities that are supporting kids, that are giving them a sense of community and mental health, etc. But in the midst of that, we open up all sorts of possibilities, and I've seen this side too, where kids can really very quickly, without their parents ever even understanding how it got down this road, suddenly find themselves in really dangerous positions or having conversations with anonymous folks they don't know. I mean, that's 100% a reality. So how are you as a parent figuring that out? Again, if you have thoughts on that, it's 404-872-0750, because I'm trying to walk that line with my kids. And here's what we've done. We put the computers for our kids, so most of their online usage is on their computers. Those are out in the open so that they're not in their bedrooms where they can close the door. We've said any sort of apps they have, obviously we have to have logins for that, and we are able to go look at it. We monitor usage online. We do all the monitoring stuff that we can, but to a certain degree, I've been hesitant to allow my kids to download a lot of these apps, even though they're old enough theoretically to have all of the social media apps, because A, I don't understand them, which I guess is imperative on me to get my act together, but B, because I also recognize there's some controls I just can't have over that, and I don't feel comfortable yet with that. So finding that line, I think it's just critical for us not only to say, wow, this is a useful tool, which so many of the articles I'm seeing right now, wow, this is a great useful tool for kids to create community. Perfect, beautiful, good. But please let's not forget the other side of that and sit and go, in the midst of being a useful tool, it's also a tool that can open your kid up to an insane amount of things that you wouldn't want them opened up to, even at 15, 16 years old. And that is something I'm concerned about. So would love your thoughts as you're trying to balance that. I know I certainly am trying to balance that tension. And as a parent, that's just not easy to do right now.
Want more of Chris? Give him a follow on Twitter at CW Burns.
Well, welcome back to the Chris Burns Show. 404-872-0750 is the number. We've been talking about how do you sit and delineate between the need for your kids to have community, especially in the midst of the coronavirus, so using different online tools, especially with my kids engaging through video gaming, but it's connected video gaming with people all over the world. And on the flip side, the desire as a parent to make sure that your kid is okay and that they are not getting into something that's going to cause them greater harm in the future, right? And here's the difference. When I was a kid, I'll never forget this. When I was a kid and the internet was first coming out and we got AOL at our house, America Online, and it was dial-up and the whole bit. I remember being a middle schooler and going downstairs, and my dad had the first laptop we'd ever had at home. And so I was on the laptop, and I found myself looking at stuff that would be inappropriate. Eventually, I kind of found my way into that, which is what most kids end up finding their way into. But here's the deal. I had no idea how the internet worked. And so it took all of about 4.5 minutes of me leaving the computer for my brother, who was 5 years older, to yell from downstairs, "Chris, come down here." And by that point, my brother and my dad had found this wonderful thing called the history on the computer, which was pretty darn straightforward. Okay, well, that's flipped. It used to be that when the technology first came out, the kids were the ones that it didn't understand. Now, at this point, many of the times, the kids are way ahead of where their parents are at, and it's the parents that are struggling to keep up. So what do you do about that? We have Diane calling in. Diane, welcome to the Chris Burns Show. What are your thoughts?
I just want to express my empathy for you. I have my own 15 going on 16-year-old girl, and everything you just said in the last 20 minutes, I'm going through. I wish I had an answer. Very frustrating. She has my trust until she loses, and now it's kind of on a borderline of things where am I looking for a reason to doubt her? I don't know. It's very hard. It's very hard trying to grow these adults.
So have you put in any sort of software? What have you done anything to actively protect against that, or is it more just trying to have conversations? Where have you landed there?
We are very close, so conversations are very open, and I'm grateful for that. The only tracking I have is on her iPhone. So if I need to, you know, find out where she's at, I push that. But then, sure. For example, last night, it gets suspiciously turned off at 1:40 in the morning.
Right.
And, oh, Mom, I was just updating my phone, and this is a person I trust.
I totally understand. And let me say this. There are options for parents, more than you think there are out there, to actually be able to monitor this effectively. But to any parent that says, well, it's not my job to do that because I have to give my kids freedom and protection and they have to have the right to security here where I can't know what's going on, I would say it's imperative as a parent that you understand what's going on. And as confusing as all this is, you and I both have that responsibility to dig in and actually understand it. Friends, thanks for listening. Have a great week.